Hello and welcome to the Substance of Life podcast. I'm glad you could join us today. Today we have a very special guest. His name is Tony J. Johnson, and he is the author of Me and My Boys, and it is a wonderful book where he shares his experiences as a mentor. But this gentleman has many, many talents, and I'm sure we will be very fortunate if he just shares a few of them with us. Hello, Tony, and how are you?
Angela, I am fine, and thank you for having me on today.
Well, you know, I want to dive right into the book, Me and My Boys. As you know, mentoring is very near and dear to my heart. Can you share with our audience how you got started in mentoring?
Well, it's pretty interesting, Angela. I was managing the local grocery store. That was what I did for a living for 37 years. And the local school here was starting a mentoring program. And they was asking some of the community leaders to be a part of it. And I got a call and said, hey, you're the first person we asked. And we'd like to know if you'd like to be part of the mentoring program. And I'll be honest with you, I had a plate full of things that I was doing. And I really wasn't interested in being a mentor. And I thought it would take up too much of my time. And then I thought it would take many obligations. And they kept coming at me and kept coming at me. And finally I said, okay, here's the key. This is what will keep me from being a mentor. I said, how many hours a week are you expecting me to spend? And they said, well, just 1 hour a week. And I couldn't turn that down. But I must admit, I reluctantly did it. But after that first meeting, I've been hooked for the last 6-7 years.
Oh, wow. So basically, you started out in the school system with some of the schools in your community. And when they approached you, what was the expectation? What were you expecting to do?
Now, they said I was expected to do what I thought was two different things. But what they wanted was just to come by. The program had to be a parent-student-mentor relationship. And when I say that, the parent has to agree to allow their kid to be mentored. The kid had to want to be mentored. And then you would come in, have lunch with the kid, sit and talk with them. Anything outside of the school had to be with permissions from the parents, of course. And just kind of give them someone to talk to about their schoolwork. At least that's what I was explaining at first. And of course, as we got going, you find that it becomes more than that. And I got so involved that I really, really enjoyed meeting these kids every day. Sometimes you would buy them lunch. I would make them earn their lunch. But it was just came a great experience.
So that's unusual. And the reason why I say it's unusual is because you were available during lunchtime. Most mentors or people who work 9-to-5 don't have time during lunchtime to mentor. So I commend you for that. I think that's extraordinary. What were some of the life lessons that you were transferring to these youth?
Well, I like to start tell you kind of when I met my first mentor, because they told me that there's only going to be one young man that you're going to mentor. And when I talked to the counselor, she said, I'm glad you're taking on these two kids. And I'm saying, two? I thought I was just doing one. And she said, oh, these, they're big friends and they don't separate. So we're going to give you two. So I just kind of talked to them, asked them certain things. But one of the things that I asked them starting out was, hey, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would you go? And those kids stopped, thought a minute, and they thought. And one of them said, you know, I would love to go to the State Fair of Texas. I'm like, and the other kid was like, yes. And I'm thinking, if all the places you could go, that was it?
How old were these kids?
These are kids that are 12 and 13 years old.
Okay.
And so it made me realize that for them, that was a dream. They had never been anywhere. They had never seen things. So we'd always have a local fair. So the big thing for them was to go to the State Fair of Texas in Dallas, and that would just be the life for them. And it, honestly, at that moment, I began to think, hey, this may be something I need to do. And it's really grown from there. I started asking them about why they thought they wanted a mentor. And, of course, the biggest thing that I found from all three of the two of the kids starting out, I ended up with four by the time it was all over, was none of these kids had a father figure in their lives. Mm. One was told that his father was deceased, and later in life found out that it was not true. The other young man had a father that the biggest memory he had of his father was when his father didn't show up for his 6th birthday party. And his father was in prison. And the other one did not know who his father was or where his father was. So that's when I truly realized these kids needed a figure, a father figure in their life or a male figure in their life to guide them. And so that's what I became.
So, I mean, what exactly did you do other than sitting down and talking with them and listening to them? Any field trips?
Yes. I made a pact that the first thing we did was made an understanding. Hey, everything you get, you earn. Life is not going to give you anything, and I'm not going to give you anything. But my first pact was you can't do anything to make me look bad, and I won't do anything to make you look bad. That was our deal.
I'm glad you stressed that, because a lot of times youth don't realize that what they do impacts another person.
Yeah.
Or their behavior impacts another person.
That's correct. And then we have a program, most schools here in Texas have it. It's called ISS. That's where if you get in trouble in school, you go to ISS, or in-school suspension is what it stands for. And then if you do something really bad, you go to DEAP. And so that you're not allowed to even go to sporting events or any school events outside of the school. You can't have lunch with people. Your classes are totally separate. And one day I got a note, text, should I say, that said, all it said was your boys are in trouble. And they never referred to them as by their names. It was always my boys. Thus the title. But it was always, I never got a text saying they're doing anything good, but every time I got a text, it was your boys are in trouble. And they had, two of them had touched a girl inappropriately, and I really, really got upset. And I talked to those young men pretty sternly. But you really can ask me what we did. Again, I tell you, I made them earn. And so the State Fair of Texas was the thing. So I told them, hey, what's the biggest problem you have? Most of them were grades with a couple of them. Says, okay, do you not understand? Oh, we understand, I just don't like doing it. Okay. So if you will bring your grade up and you'll start doing the things that you should do, I'll take you to the State Fair. And we took three of those kids to the State Fair. Now, a lot of the projects we could not do because some parents did not want, didn't know me well enough to send their kids outside. But I'd like to tell you about one young man, and he's not in the book, and his name is Sean. And Sean did not actually come to be mentored. He was in that DAEP program where I called it school jail.
I was going to say it has a lot of similarities to school jail, because you are taking these children and you are placing them outside of the normal school system.
Yes. And unfortunately, one of my kids were there. So as I walked in, I saw this young man look at me. And I asked the counselor there, I said, what is that kid in for? And he began to tell me, and I said, well, hang on just a minute. I want to hear from the kid. So I pulled Sean in and I said, Sean, tell me why you're here. And Sean said, well, I stole some money from the teacher's purse in class while she was at the board. So you did it while she was in class? Yes, everybody was watching. He said, I shared it with my friends because I don't have any money and my friends don't have money either. So I said, how many days do you have left, Sean? He says, because Sean, you just don't look like the kind of kid that would steal. He said, well, I have 10 days left. I said, Sean, tell me something. If money was no issue, what would you buy with the money you had? Sean looked at me and says, oh, I would love to have a pair of Nike shoes. He said, that's my dream. If I could ever get a pair of Nike shoes, life would be good. I said, okay, what else would you buy? He said, well, I'd buy a pair of pants because I only have one.
Now, wait a second. I have to stop you. So you're telling me this story, and this is not the 1960s or the 1970s.
No.
But we are in the 21st century.
That is correct.
In Texas. And there is a child who only had one pair of pants.
According to what he said.
Okay. And to me, that's important because what we're doing now is we are giving a framework of this kid's world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in middle school.
He is in middle school.
Okay.
And I said to him, I said, Sean, why do you do the things you do? He said, well, my mom... I have a younger brother, and I think she loves him more than she loves me, et cetera. But I told him, I said, Sean, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make a deal with you. You got 10 days left. If you're good, I'll buy you a pair of Nike skinny shoes, I'll buy you a pair of pants, and I'll buy your shirt. He was excited. He said, okay. I came back 3 days later. Sean had this sad look on his face. Sean didn't make it 3 days. So I said, Sean, what happened? Well, I got upset, got mad, had a situation here with some other kid. I was like, Sean, you have 7 days left. I'll make this deal with you. Maybe I was wrong. If you can last the 7 days, I'll buy you those same three things. But I'll tell you, if you mess up, you lose the Nike shoes. If you mess up twice, you lose the shoes and the pants. If you mess up three times, you lose all three because you have to be accountable for something. Well, lo and behold, he made 7 days. I got with his mom. She allowed me to come pick him up. My wife and my two kids met me in the little city nearby. And I said, Sean, where do you want to go eat? He says, I want to go to Chili's. I said, okay, well, that sounds great. I said, have you ever been to Chili's? Of course, he says, oh, I go there all the time. I said, okay. And as my family was there and we were looking at menus, and Sean kept going page to page, page to page. I said, Sean, what are you thinking about getting? Sean says, well, I'm trying to see which one of these steaks I want. I said, Sean, you haven't been that good yet. Okay. We're going to work our way up.
We got to work our way up to a steak, Sean.
But surprisingly, Sean ordered a whole rack of ribs. He ate every chip that they ever brought with salsa. He had the most drink. He ate and ate and ate. And he wanted dessert. We bought him dessert. And he ate and he couldn't eat anymore. So my daughter, which is had graduated from school at the time and loved to shop too. And so we go to the mall. And as we go into the Nike store, I looked at my wife and said, you know, I don't think I put a price on shoes.
Uh-oh.
That's what I said.
Uh-oh.
But to my surprise, he picked out a pair of shoes, which was a very medium price. And he got those pair of Nike shoes. Took him to the department store to get him some pants. And I'm a pretty disciplined father, and I don't, you know, my kids, my daughter always asks her dad, it doesn't like silly. So Sean goes, he tries on clothes, my wife is helping him with clothes, and he just comes out a little dancing, and I kind of get onto him, and my daughter, who's looks at me and says, Dad, you take the F in fun, F and E out of fun. She said, you got to realize that he's probably never got to pick out any clothes for himself. He's never picked out a shirt. This is the most Christmas time in June that we could have. And I never thought of it that way.
Wow.
And I think my wife bought him four or five pairs of pants, four or five shirts. And he was ecstatic. And I went to see him a week later. I'm sorry. While he was in school. Mm-hmm. And I went to see him a week later. And Sean didn't have his shoes on. I said, Sean, where are your shoes? He said, well, my mom got mad at me. And she took my shoes away. I said, okay. So when I left him, I called his mom. I said, ma'am, can I speak with you? I said, I went to visit Sean today, and he didn't have his shoes. And she said, yeah, he did something to his little brother, and I took him away. I said, ma'am, do you mind me saying this? I said, you get paid a paycheck every week. And she said, yes, I do. I said, did you earn those paychecks? She said, yes, I did. I said, now, what if week two, you did something wrong that your boss wanted you to give back week one's money? I said, would you think that's fair? She says, no. I said, why not? She says, because I've earned that money. And I said, well, Sean's earned those shoes. He did those 7 days without getting in trouble. And that's as long as he's gone a long time without getting in trouble. So he earned those. If you're going to punish him, I'm not saying don't punish him, but punish him with something that he did not earn. But let the things that he earned stay. And she actually thought about it and said, I think you're right. And I'm telling you, Sean was a happy, happy kid. Now, I have to tell this story, and I have to finish, and I hope I'm not taking up too much of your time.
Oh, no, no. By all means, we are all intrigued here.
Sean goes into high school, and there's an accusation that he had molested his brother. And he goes, and they take him away. And I lost track of Sean. Until about 8 months ago, I get a Facebook request from Sean. Now, Sean looks totally different. I'm not sure it's the same kid, but it does have the same name. But he lives in Georgia. And so I text him and says, did you go to school in the local area? He says, yes, you were my mentor. He's a high schooler playing football he's joined the ROTC. He has lost his mom. His mom passed away. And I am going to surprise him this year by going, they moved now to North Carolina. My wife and I are going to fly to North Carolina to watch him play a football game. And it meant so much to him because he told me, he says, I don't know where my life would be if I hadn't had you come into my life.
And that's what mentoring is all about.
That's what mentoring is all about.
Sometimes we don't know the impact that we can make in a young person's life. And, you know, it's almost biblical because there is there's an excerpt or a story in the Old Testament where it says that, you know, as Paul was walking down the streets of Rome, just his shadow was able to help and heal.
Yes.
And I liken that to just the presence of an adult who cares, mm-hmm. who is willing to pass along that life skill in a non-threatening way, but in a way that child can see that they matter and they are important. That carries so much weight in an individual's life that I think sometimes people forget the importance thereof. People forget that, you know, mentoring has a large impact on people. So, mm-hmm. my God, I applaud you for that. I'm excited about the fact that you're going to Sean's football game and that
yes.
he's continuing to excel.
That's correct. And that's the thing. Now, I've mentored probably six kids from that school. And I've been on the school board for 15 years. This is my 15th year. And all but two of those kids, I've been able to hand them their high school diploma.
How spectacular.
And that has been a thrill.
So, I mean, when we look at the root of some of these issues, of course, economics is one of them. But mm-hmm. some of them could be attributed to parents just don't have enough time in the day to do it all.
You're exactly right. What I find most is that most of these kids, like I said before, don't have a father figure in their lives. And mom is struggling to make ends meet. And mom's working hard. And there's just no time for the two to sometimes come together. Now, the problem, and I have to admit something, and it's in the book as well, is that when I saw the first two kids that I was going to mentor, as someone told me after a seminar, you were stereotyping when you were setting these kids up. And I had this vision of what these kids looked like. And when I met them, they looked just like my kids. They were dressed just like my kids. So I've come to realize as a mentor that pain, hurt, economic situations, it knows no color. It knows no race. It knows no age. It knows no gender. Because what I've come to realize is that everybody hurts and yearns for a lot of the same things. The biggest thing I wanted to instill in these kids was you had to believe in yourself. And I had this thought process that kids that want to be mentored don't want discipline. And I've come to find out that's not true. Discipline to these kids mean that they are loved. They want it to be discipline. They wanted somebody to hold them accountable because that's what they see from their friends that they think are loved. And I would always try to create a family atmosphere because many times when I would go at lunch, there would be ladies with young ladies mentoring as well. And I would partner with them. So we would have a woman and a man and a boy and a girl, and it created a family atmosphere. So they could talk about things together. And I'm telling you, it's really, really grown. The mentoring program has grown. I've had principals leave and go to another school, and I've gone and mentored some kids at different schools, and they didn't have a program. And so I got to the point where I would travel and start mentoring programs at different schools. And the book came about because I wanted people to understand what mentoring was all about. I didn't want them to have the same thought process that I did. And I wanted them to know that all these kids needed was love. And it's just amazing what a little bit of love will do.
And that's important because I often ask myself, how do we get back to those quintessential things in life that we just don't have time to express? And love is one of them, and caring is one of them. How do we get our children to understand what love is and what love is not? And it's funny because even as an infant, they start to realize certain things. You know, don't touch the stove because it's hot. Or, you know, don't touch that thing that's on grandma's coffee table. And you smack their little hands. It's teaching them. It's disciplining them. What were some of the issues that you heard coming from these middle school kids? What were some of their concerns?
Well, one of their concerns was, let me go back to the young man that his father was in prison, and his dad had told him that he would be at his sixth birthday and never showed up. He had just before I began mentoring him, he had just lost his grandmother, which was dear to him. And his father had written him a letter asking him to come see him in prison. And he looked at me and says, I don't know whether to go or not to go. He says, because I have this dislike for my father in my mind. I don't know whether to love him or hate him. I don't know how to handle the loss of a loved one. The other kid was, I have family issues where my uncle is verbally abusing me, and I don't know how to handle it. And they have no one, their biggest fear is having no one to talk to, no one to listen to them. A lot of them had school issues in classrooms. And I used to think it was because they were just bad kids. But I come to realize that it was a cry for attention. Hey, look at me. Hey, care about me. Hey, give me some time. And I've always said there's three different kinds of time. One time you give to your organization and the things you love and the people you care about. The other one is the time you give to work. But the most precious time we have is quality time. And these kids never got quality time from parents. These kids never got quality time from anyone else. And when I gave them quality time, it meant so much. I see one of my kids every now and then, and he was not one of the great success stories. And when I asked him, hey, where have you been? I haven't seen you. He drops the head and goes, well, I just got out of jail. No. The head dropping is not because he's ashamed necessarily, but he is it's a shame because the pact still remains. You do nothing to embarrass me, and I do nothing to embarrass you.
And he remembered the pact.
He remembers the pact.
Yeah, he remembers
to this day, pact. All those kids remember the pact.
And you know, Tony, what's interesting about the pact that you made with those young men, it actually is a verbal honor contract. It is similar to the honor code at many of those military institutions that you join or you go to when you're in high school or college. You have an honor code, and what you instilled in them was the honor code. It's the honor code never leaves you. And it's funny that you share that for me, because I just in your description, I had a glimpse of my honor code when I joined the military, and I still carry that with me to this day. So I can understand why he dropped his head in shame, because he's like, I broke the honor code.
Yes. And these are kids that have now been out of school for 3 and 4 and 5 years. So they're on their own. They don't have to look at me and go, you know, they could simply look at me and go, you know, you don't have anything to do with me anymore. But it's still that thrill of they come to me before I see them. I said, hey, do you remember me? And I call them by name. Sure, I remember you. And the look on their faces is amazing. Now, I will tell you, and I think it's kind of a funny story. You know, this is volunteer work, and I've never been fired for volunteering once in my life. But I told you about the two young men that had touched a young lady inappropriately, and I said in my book, I became a father to them that day. I treated them like if it was my own kid, and maybe I should not have done that, but I did. And I saw the look on their faces, and I think my words to them was, do you not want me to be your mentor or not? When I looked at me and said, well, we was really kind of hoping someone closer to our own age.
Okay.
And they both told me that they would prefer me not to be their mentor anymore. Now, that's when I knew that here I was. I really wasn't really wanting to mentor any kids. But this is when I knew I was hooked. It bothered me. I accepted the fact that I wasn't going to be their mentor. Went and talked to the council and told them what they said. For 2 weeks, every time I met with the other group, I missed them. And one day while I worked, I was about to leave, and I saw a young man had trouble with his vehicle, and looked up, and he's a young man I had gone to school with, and he needed a ride. And as I was taking him for a ride, he told me, he said, "I think you are my nephew's mentor."
Oh, wow.
I said, who's your, he told me the name. I said, "Yeah, well," I said, "oh, I was." I said, "but, you know, they kind of let me go." Well, it made him angry, which was a good thing in one way. But when we got home, he went inside and, oh my gosh, when the kid told me he was verbally being abused by his uncle, mm-hmm. This was the uncle.
Wow.
Right there in front of him. And he called himself doing good and saying, "you need to stick with Tony." And I had to step in front of him. I told him, "this has got to stop. I'm not going to let you sit here and abuse this young man." Little to my knowledge, that brought the kid back. He came back the next day with his friend and said, "hey, we want you back. I want you to be my mentor again." And that was a thrill for me, but it was also a thrill for them. And one of those young men went on to college, is in college now. The other one I've lost track of, can't find his grandmother to find out where he's at. But the last I heard, he was doing well. Not in college, but he was doing well. So it makes a difference.
So if you had the attention of not just the school system in Texas, but the school system across the United States, because I would venture to say what you have experienced might have been unique experience to you, but is not a unique experience across the United States school system in certain areas. What would you tell them? What would you offer them in terms of a mentorship program or just advice on, hey, this is what I think you should do?
Well, the first thing I think you have to do is set rules, boundaries, and then make the kid earn something. And because these kids are looking for a family. I used to think they were looking for someone that could help them with their homework. I used to think it was someone that could buy them things. They want family atmosphere. Now, a family atmosphere in my household, in most households, there's rewards. There's discipline. There's responsibility. There's chores. There was nothing more exciting for those kids that when they got their grades, they could not wait to meet with me. Especially if they'd done good. They could not wait till I come in. And it was, I don't care if I brought them food, if I just came to sit with them during their lunch, it was all about the improvements they had made in their classes. And I'm telling you, the other thing I would do, tell the people, if you're going to take on the role of a mentor, you have to defend the kids. You have to stand up and be an advocate for them. You know, I had a teacher of another young man, and again, he's not in, but this was a high school kid. And the teacher told me, "I think you're just wasting your time with this kid." Wow. And I looked at her and I said, "well, you know, if that's the attitude you have, you're never going to give him a chance. And if you're never going to give him a chance, maybe he needs to get out of this class." And I told her that with him there. So I wanted him to hear, "I'm going to defend you, but also I'm going to hold you accountable." And I said, "now, if he's not doing what he should do, then let the principal know so he will let me know." I said, "but if he's doing good, when I come by to check on him, I want you to tell me that in front of me." And believe it or not, before the end of the year, she apologized to both of us and said, "you know, I never thought he would make a change, but I saw a change in him." Now, this high school kid had a problem with temper. He just was unruly. He couldn't play. He'd get kicked out of the football game because he had a temper. And again, we made the same pact. "You don't do anything to embarrass me. I'll do nothing to embarrass you." This kid went through the whole basketball season. He had about three episodes. And I got to the point where I was so in with him that I would go to his games, both near and far, to make sure that he understood that I cared enough about him, because that's what I would do with my own kid.
But, you know, and a lot of parents don't do that.
That's correct.
A lot of parents do not attend their children's activities. And I understand work circumstances. I have four kids, and I got to tell you, at the end of the night, after attending a football game or cheerleading or a play rehearsal, I was so exhausted. I had to get up and do it all over again. But the value of being there was such that you couldn't replace it. And I found my husband, I remember when he was working the charter business, driving, and, you know, schedules are not such that he would be there, but every single time he attended a game, the look in my children's eye was just unbelievable. It was like, my daddy's here. Oh my gosh, my daddy's here. And that meant the world to them. Go ahead, please.
It's amazing you say that, because this kid would look for me during his warm-ups. And once he spotted me, he kind of smiled and bowed his head. And every now and then, there's about three times, like I said, that he lost his temper during the game. They set him down. And after the game, here he'd come with his head bowed. I know. I shouldn't do anything to embarrass you. You shouldn't. And they would say it before I could say it to them. And I can remember, and you may have read this in the book as well, one day my wife came at going to visit my kid, and she said, tell me how it went today. I said, well, you know, I've come to realize these kids are like my grandmother's fried pies. And we grew up poor, and my grandmother I didn't live with my grandmother. I only went there for the summers to work in the farm. But the stove, the floor of the kitchen was not even or level. And so neither was the stove. And when you would put a skillet on the stove to fry those pies, the oil would go to one side and not the other. So you would have a fried pie that was nice and brown on one end and dark and burnt on the other. I said, but it made no difference how they looked. All I knew that the best part was to leave the crust. And all these kids have a crust. I don't care what state they're in. If you can break the crust, if you can let them know that, hey, it's okay to be loved, and it's okay to love somebody. That's what I would tell these people, that you've got to mentor, any mentor, I don't care if it's male or female, you have to break the crust and create the trust. If you can do that, then these kids will listen to you when nobody else can get them to listen. The coach would pull this kid out, and he would sit on the end of the bench. And one day I just leaned over the rail and said, this is a team sport. They want you in that huddle when everybody comes up. Now, he was mad and his lips were stuck out. But the next time they call a timeout, he was in the middle of that huddle. Once they know that you love them, what's the old saying? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Exactly.
And that's the thing that I found with these kids. They just want somebody. Now, if you've noticed, in telling these stories, I've not indicated a race, because these kids came from all walks of life. There were kids from every ethnic background that I've had. And that's when I realized, is that there is no stereotype for hurt. There is no stereotype for kids and people that need to be loved. And so it has consumed me. I love it. I enjoy it. And I don't think I'll ever stop doing it.
Well, we here at the Substance of Life applaud you and salute you, Tony, for doing what you do for free. And ladies and gentlemen, our time is just about up, but we want you to go online to Amazon and purchase a copy of Me and My Boys, My Mentoring Experience by Tony J. Johnson. And I urge those individuals who are teachers, who are educators, to go and buy the book and glean some of the golden nuggets that are in the book and transfer it to your classroom or to your mentoring program. As Tony said, hurt has no color or gender or economic status. So, Tony, I got to thank you for coming on board, and hopefully we can have you on board again to share some more of your experiences here at the Substance of Life.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to come on and to speak. And, you know, I do a lot of public speaking, and every time I go somewhere, I talk about these kids, because I'm telling you, as I tell people, and sometimes when I'm speaking, if we don't mentor them, somebody else is going to. And so if we want them to be right, we've got to mentor them in the right way.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. And as always, find a way to inspire someone to increase their substance of life.